Hey, cashiers. We Have the Receipts podcast is coming at you live from Netflix is a Joke Fest in Los Angeles.
Chris, are you kidding?
No, Netflix is a joke, Courtney, but this is not one of them. Our listeners in LA have the chance to join us for a live recording of our podcast, We Have the Receipts, hosted by me, Chris Burns.
And me, Courtney Revolution.
Join us and a few surprise guests from your favorite Netflix reality shows on Saturday, May 4th at 1 p.m. at a secret location in Hollywood.
To be announced.
Get your tickets for the We Have the Receipts live show at tudum.com/WHTR. That's Tudum, TUDUM.com/WHTR.
Tickets are limited. If you can't make it to the show, we still want to hear your beautiful voice. Leave us a message at speakpipe.com/WeHaveTheReceipts.
You may even hear your own voice on the show.
Grab a ticket at tudum.com/WHTR.
And we'll see you on May 4th in Los Angeles. Bye, cashiers.
I just want everyone to be supportive of young people making mistakes, learning from them, and growing.
You're listening to Skip Intro with me, Krista Smith. Millie Bobby Brown and I have set a pretty good record of checking in with each other every other year since 2020. During that initial interview, Millie was just 17 years old and had recently wrapped up work on the movie Enola Holmes, which she starred in and was a first-time producer on. In 2022, we sat down to discuss the making of Enola Holmes 2 and her growth as an actor and producer. It's been less than a year and a half since then, but so much has happened. She published her first novel, 19 Steps, expanded her brand, Florence by Mills, to now include coffee and a line of clothing, and started filming the final season of Stranger Things. Oh, and she got engaged to Jake Bon Jovi, in case you missed that little bit of news. So there's a lot going on for Millie, to say the least. I'm grateful we got a chance to catch up on all of that, plus talk about her new film, Damsel, which she stars in and produced with her company, PMCA Productions.
Hi!
Hi, Mills! It is good to see you. I love it. Catching up with you like every 18 months or so. It's awesome.
I know.
And
yeah,
we're almost 20.
I know.
I mean, what's going on, Millie? Like,
oh my gosh. I mean, I'm very excited. I'm almost 20. I feel like people think 21 is big, but because I don't drink. So I'm like, okay, 20 is way cooler to me. Also 18. It's like 20 is so cool. Like I'm double digits. My 10th was like one of my favorite birthdays. Mm-hmm. So 20 feels like it's going to be that too.
It's great. And you're no longer a teenager also.
Right.
So I agree with you on the 2021. I think 20 is huge and a happy early birthday. So congrats on Damsel. It's just so great to see you be so, you're in every scene basically, and to like so much action and so forceful. I just love the messaging of this film as well. And I know that the director, Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, you were his first and only choice to play Elodie. But I want to know from your POV when you got this script, what were you thinking when you first read it? Because you only get that first read, right? That first impression.
I was always drawn to this role. And obviously, it's the biggest compliment hearing JC wanted me. I was really excited. I remember he sent me like a big board of a picture of what would look like me as a princess behind like this really cinematic kind of set. And I, on the back, was like, you are always going to be our princess. And I was just like, oh my goodness. It felt so nice to be really wanted. And it made me so excited. And I was always really excited about heading into this role and this film, just because I knew it would challenge me and I knew it would push me. And I was excited about that.
And you have a great cast of women. And I personally obviously love seeing Robin Wright, the original Princess Bride, in there in a deliciously wicked role. And Angela Bassett, of course, that was great. But that was really it. And then you're in a cave alone. So how was that as an actor? You had to have done that for several weeks alone.
Right.
Right.
I actually filmed on my own first and then finished with everyone, which was really nice because I was able to get through all the really hard stuff and then I was able to enjoy the rest and work with other actors. But yeah, that was probably the biggest challenge for me, was just working on my own.
And I read that you did all your own stunts, which is kind of crazy when people see this movie.
Yes.
I mean, it's not quite Tom Cruise level yet. You're not jumping out of airplanes, but you were.
I actually don't think I'm ever going to be his level. He is so talented and fearless. I am deeply entertained and impressed by Tom Cruise. But if I can be the small young woman version, I would be happy to.
What was the hardest part of all of that physical stuff you had to do? Did you kind of surprise yourself that you were able to do it?
I think anyone can do it. It just requires a lot of determination and a lot of commitment. You can't half-ass it. You have to go in 150% every take. You have to make it believable. You have to make people care. And if the camera op or the director or the producers are like not believing it, then we have to go again and I have to do it better. I want everyone to care. I think that's just your performance. You know, they're relying on your performance to sell it. You know, like 50% of it is the stunt, but the other 50% is my reaction, the way I hit the ground, my body movements. I think that's all really a big part of it.
Yeah, the camera's right on your face. Obviously, I'm not an actor, but seeing how the camera just gets everything, like how intense that must be to work like that.
Camera operators just do have an invasive job. Like having a camera in your face for 3-4 months of your life and Stranger Things, like a year of my life, you have to have a good relationship with your camera operator. They are staring at your face. They know exactly what's on your face, what looks different. If something's good, if something doesn't work, like they are so part of the collaboration experience together. And I value camera operators and their whole team on the camera department so much because I truly think that they are such a vital, important role on a set, as is everyone, but it is the most invasive job. That and hair and makeup, right? They're just always here with you and you have to build a really strong and trusted relationship.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because in this film, obviously it's so physical, but you're put in these situations that have to be like kind of stressful, even as a human and as an actor, in those caves and it's cramped and dark and you're creating that because the audience is there with you. And then you go and you look at the tape and you're like, well, do I have to do that again? And yeah, I guess I do.
I think it's all about, like, for me on this film specifically, it was all about like energy preservation. Like, do I have to do this again? Am I going to do it better next time? Or am I going to get more tired? Like, I have to be really honest and transparent with myself and the production and the director. It was like I was going to therapy every day. You have to be very open and very vulnerable and willing to open up and be honest about your performance. And it was a very grounding experience.
I think when we first spoke, you were just starting to produce on Enola. And then you had Enola 2. And then obviously this one, you were a producer. What have you learned on this one over the years of starting the baby steps on the first Enola Holmes and then the second one and now this film?
I guess that's a really good question. I think perception, like you have to see perspective. You have to go back to gaining relationships with everyone on the set and providing a really safe, fun, collaborative work environment. I've learned how to manage that now. Like at the beginning, I'll just hide in the corner and it's scary because you have this really big title, but I didn't have any experience being a producer. But now I strive for everyone to feel comfortable and loved on the set and needed. And just perception, like being able to take yourself out of the moment and look back on the take. I have to look back as if it's not me. You know, I have to look back on the take and think, okay, what can be done differently in this scene or setup or shot? Or I have to see perspective. But it's hard because you're like tunnel vision on you. And that's all actors really do. They focus on themselves. But as a producer, you can't do that. And you have to take yourself out of that, which can be hard to transition from Millie to actor and producer. So I just have to give myself more leeway.
Yeah. One thing I want to talk about is there's this great scene, and listeners, when you see the movie, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, is when you're getting ready to be married and you are getting the bridal gown and they start, it's like a montage, one after another, after another, after another. Talk to me about that scene and doing that.
It's probably the most frustrating scene I've ever filmed. You know, it's just like, first of all, I don't like corsets. Who does? And everything you see me dress in that montage is what I wore for every day for 4 months. You become resentful of the outfit. Like I saw it the other day and I was just like, I'm traumatized. So by the end of the film, and I'm just like in my kind of chemise, I'm like, this is, you know, the best outfit ever. And it makes you grateful for when you do other jobs and you're like, you just want me to wear like sweatpants because you're wearing like, you're wearing all this stuff. But I think it's just a reflection on what society made women feel like back then. And I did feel so restricted. Like I couldn't really breathe. The outfit also just was like a role in itself. Like it was a character in itself. It moved differently to me. If I would go that way, it would go that way. It was just one of those had a mind of its own. So I was always fighting the outfit, which is very, very, again, a reflection on Elodie fighting this dress, the whole film, but using it to her advantage.
Mm-hmm. But it was a great scene because when you look at it, when we see pictures in a museum of women in these outfits, you don't really think about the time and the pain and the precision that it took to actually get into them and then wear them
the
all day long.
Crushed. Yeah, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot. You can't breathe. That's why I was so excited about creating Florence by Mills Fashion, because I was just like, it's going to be the most comfortable, flexible thing ever. And so that's what I love about that. But now going into my other roles, I'm like, no corset, we will fake it till we make it. Actually, during this movie, I was wearing a wig the whole time. So I dyed my hair pink underneath and I couldn't wash it out. Like it was the worst decision ever. I was just so bored and I was just like doing it in the sink by myself. So it's, yeah, I don't know. My hair is very unhappy with me, but it's healthy now. We've gotten it to a state. My mom is like, we have to stop with this. So she gave me a talking to, so I'm not touching my hair anymore. I'm a chameleon. I get really bored. If I have a breakup or if I'm like hungry or just overall a little upset, I'll either cut my hair or put extensions in or just dye it pink.
Well, all of your roles I feel are very empowering for young women. When I was looking at this and I was thinking last night, and I'm sure you've thought of this, but Eleven, Enola, and Elodie. Is there something with E's? Yeah. I was like, and they're such unique names.
I have actually thought that too. Yeah, I think it's just my lucky letter. But all of them have meant something so deeply to me. 11 being one of the biggest roles I've ever had to play and ever probably will play, and the most meaningful, of course, because 11 is what launched me into this career, but also me, you know. Shaving my hair off was, I think, the most pivotal moment of my life thus far, because it showed that how badly I wanted it, how committed I was. Would go and take it to work. And then being able to do Enola and prove to everyone I can carry a film, I could do this. And then, you know, to do Elodie and be like, I can carry a film on my own. It was very cool to be able to put myself in that position and challenge myself. And I think it's a rarity that women are able to get such huge opportunities and have such a seat at the table. So Netflix have been a huge part of that.
What do you hope young women and girls take away from this film?
You can be a princess in your own way. I think that's the biggest key. When I was younger, being a princess was my favorite kind of imaginative. That's always what I pretended to be. I dressed up as a princess and I loved like the idea of being a princess. This has completely changed my mindset on being a princess. The end of Elodie at the end of the film is the kind of princess that I want to strive to be. And so I think it's just changing the idea for young, especially young girls, on what a princess is expected to be, and that you don't have to be saved by the prince all the time. Although princes are great and we love them and they're very handsome, but it's nice to be able to be a warrior too.
Mm-hmm. I love this warrior phase. I love Millie's warrior phase. I also appreciate how open you are about how you're evolving as a person. You mentioned 11 and, you know, we can see you through the lens of your films, but also through the lens of the other stuff that you do, like, for instance, the book, which we'll get to in a minute. But you admit that you're always changing and you're growing and you're figuring out who Millie is at the same time, which I think is such powerful messaging in and of itself. You know, that you're not perfect. You know that you're going to grow and change and become different. And it's kind of interesting to see you experience it through these characters.
Definitely. I think the characters help me decide and move. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to grow in front of people because people get attached and people love a version of you. And then you shed that layer and then they're like, wait, who is this? And it's hard because you've watched someone grow on screen. So of course, like you don't want them to go. And I feel the same way. When I watch stuff, I'm always like, what? They're married. They're not really with that person. Because it's such escapism, this job, it helps you escape from our reality. And I think that's what Stranger Things was specifically for so many people. And I think that's why it took the world by storm, because people were able to transcend into this other multiverse. And so I think that's why people get attached. And I just feel it's important, especially for young actors, to just feel they're encouraged to grow and change and morph. That's our job. We're chameleons. We're meant to evolve. And I just want everyone to be supportive of young people making mistakes, learning from them and growing.
Let's talk about your New York Times bestseller, 19 Steps, which is just kind of incredible to me because it's a story that's part of your family history, basically, about an incident in World War II that very few people talked about. It was one of those things that even when it happened, where people were killed running into the tube to be saved from an air raid, you had a writer with you helping you through that process. But what did you learn about your own life and family through that?
19 Steps was like a work in progress for quite a while. Before my grandmother died, she had Alzheimer's. And so we recorded stories of her childhood and what she went through. And so we were able to use all of those in the book. It was really nice, like for me, even just to grieve. But it's nice to just be able to look back and see my grandmother's stories in person and writing. And of course, most of it is made up. But to have one, the names are really important to our family. And then the big pivotal storylines are really important, based around a historical event that wasn't spoken about and was so important to my nan's history and the community of Bethnal Green. So it felt really nice to be able to do that and to commemorate, you know, my grandmother's strength and her family's strength.
And it's no small achievement to get on the New York Times bestselling list either. So I just had to shout that out because that's a very big deal. Yeah. And obviously, I love watching your social on your Florence by Mills. That brand seems to be really growing and super impactful in that space. I assume you still love doing it and there's more coming. I mean, we've got clothes, we've got makeup, all kinds of things.
I think that's the place where I can feel like people like drawing or doing friendship bracelets or doing the fun like sleepover stuff. That is my fun. That's my girly time where I'm able to create like fun face masks and hair masks and a cool lipstick. And I am the consumer. And that's always been like my number one thing. If I walk into a store and I'm looking for something, I'm like, I'm going to make it. You know, like that's just the way I think. And it's a crazy way to create things and do friendship bracelets. I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity and to be able to share it with my generation and especially generations that come after me. It means the world. And of course, I'm having so much fun with it. It's a place where I can go when I'm filming and have to cry and scream. And then I'm able to come back and do a meeting about clothes and trying on pajamas. Like, who wouldn't want to do that? That's so fun.
If I could live in pajamas, I'd be happy.
It's a rarity that I'm in jeans.
Last time we spoke, you had, I think it was 5 dogs, 2 cats, and you were rescuing and fostering a bunch of other animals. And you were joking like, oh my God, my boyfriend, I'm the crazy lady that's got all the animals. But now fiance, I should say. Yes. Yay, we love Jake.
Now I'm at 9 dogs. And 4 cats. So I've added 2 cats. I don't know what cats I had at the time when I was speaking with you, but now I have 4 and they're my babies and they're all rescues. One of them lost their mom when they were really young. So I bottle fed him. And then Rico, my other cat, actually had cancer as a kitten. And I gave him B12 shots and IVs every 3 days. I made up an oil that I put in his food to help like his inflammation. And I retested him a few months after and he tested negative and he was in remission. So I felt like I helped him get over it, either emotionally or mentally or whatever I physically did. I think I was just there for him and I truly cared. And so I kept him because I knew we had been on too much of a journey together.
Right. You were bonded. Did you have one particular animal with you on Damsel while shooting that film?
All of my dogs came on Damsel. So I had 4 dogs at the time when I was filming Damsel and all of them came. So I had a Great Dane, a Golden Retriever. And then I had Winnie. So that is who I brought to set every day. Actually, on the last day, they all ran onto set and came and gave me kisses. It was very fun.
Oh, that is some B-roll I'd like to see. Okay, so outside the box, Millie's throwing a dinner party. Who are you inviting to your dinner party? They can be alive, they can be dead, they can be fictional. Who do you want at your dinner table? And what are you serving?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to serve chicken parm, Brussels sprouts from Craig's in LA.
Mm-hmm. I know them well.
Yep. Focaccia, lemonade, and ginger ale. And I'm going to invite my brother, my two sisters, my mom, my dad, and Jake.
Nice. And some animals under, right?
The animals have already eaten all the food on the table. That's the reality of having dinner with all of us. Yeah, that's probably my favorite kind of dinner. Oh. It's hectic, very chaotic and loud, but it's my favorite kind.
Oh, nice. All right. So now I know that we're starting back because of obviously the strike and whatnot delayed the last season of Stranger Things. And you also have Electric State coming out. So have you started at all on Stranger Things yet?
Yes.
You have.
We are in production. It's very exciting. Finally, my tattoo comes in handy because in every other job I've been doing, I've had to cover it up. So now for a year, I get to live with my tattoo. So yeah, it's really exciting. I like love going back onto set and just being with the family and crew and being able to be with Eleven like one last time, one last hurrah.
It's got to be like getting the band back together, like a reunion of sorts.
And it's a very big band.
Yeah.
It's 30, 40 people. And we are all crazy and chaotic and fun. And so it's a very loud band.
I love it. And I can't wait for Electric State with the Russo brothers. We'll have to talk again for that. Well, it's awesome seeing you, Millie. I'm so happy for you. And I always love catching up with you. And good luck with the shooting of Stranger Things. Obviously, I'll be here at the end of it. But good luck and enjoy the rest of the day. And happy birthday. 20's going to be awesome.
Bye.
Damsel is streaming now on Netflix. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Krista Smith, your host and creator of the show. Skip Intro is produced and edited by Isabel Arricchio and engineered by Dave Corwin. Special thanks to our coordinator, Alyssa Hillman. Please subscribe, rate, and review Skip Intro wherever you've been listening. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Krista Smith. If you enjoy the podcast, please go to NetflixQue.com for more. That's NetflixQueue.com.